Blog Talk Radio.
What is Ulu and what is it to do? We'll find out in a few minutes. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join this conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You'll be on the Blog Talk Radio site at that time. My name is Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Baba Hakima, who is one of the founders of Ulu. Peace, Baba Hakima. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sis. Good to hear your voice, and good to be back on Dare to Win.
It's good to have you back, and it's good to hear you as well.
Good.
So tonight, we have agreed that we will talk about the Uru 10-point appeal and plan for the new black economy. Is there anything you want to say before we get into that?
Yes, and of course, tonight's topic, what is Uru and what is Uru to do? I thought the best way to answer that question would be to go through the 10-point appeal and plan. We probably won't get a chance to go through it all this evening, so I'm thinking that we're going to do part one and part two, and part two may be coming sometime next month. But it gives us an organized way to answer the question and be succinct about it as we go through the 10 points of the Uru 10-point appeal and plan. And I would say to our listening audience, you can follow along with us in terms of the plan. It's on our website, usliftingus.com, and click the About tab, and you'll see one of the drop-down options is the 10-point appeal and plan. And as a matter of fact, if you click on it, a print-ready version comes up and you can print it out fairly easily. And we encourage people to do that because the plan provides a well-rounded way of grasping what Uru is and, again, what it is to do. So that's the reason I think it's good for us to answer the overall question and the topic for this evening by going through the 10-point appeal and plan. Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So are you ready to start now? I'll read the points to you and you can elaborate on them.
Yeah. I'm more than ready. I'm
okay.
Eager. You know.
Okay.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Okay, so the first one is, as black people, we take full responsibility for the economic destiny of our communities and nations.
Ashe. That's the first point because it for us, that's the nexus. That's the germ seed. That's where everything starts. It starts with us. Taking not just responsibility, but full responsibility for the economic plight of our people locally and globally. And I would go even further to say that if we don't take that position, that we are responsible and fully responsible, then it's going to be difficult to build the systems and institutions that give us the power to control. Because if we don't take full responsibility, then by default, we are hoping that some other people, some other entity, some other force in the world would take responsibility. And, of course, that's not going to happen. As all of us know, I shouldn't say all of us know, but that most of us know that things happen for the most part because they are planned, they're intentional, and resources are put behind them. So we dare not put ourselves in a position where we are dependent on other forces to change our situation. And in the 10-point appeal and plan, when you look at the text, full responsibility is the only text that we underline because we think that's it's just that important. So that again, that's that first point when we talk about what is Uru and what is Uru to do. Just remember, it starts with the intent that we gain control of the economics of our own communities and nations. So that first point begins to to unfold this narrative, this explanation of what is Zulu and what is Zulu to do. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So point number two is that black persons and black institutions, especially the black church, joined together as members in a large-scale cooperatively owned business enterprise to pool our resources. Okay.
Ashe. And coming after point one, when we say take full responsibility, then how do we begin to do that? And what we are calling for is individuals and institutions in our community to pull together, aggregate resources. And we point out the black church because it's been the most significant institution in our community throughout our history. Recently, we were advised to add the historically black universities and colleges to that list. And it just may be that, in the coming months or weeks and months, we may consider adding that. But so what we have done, we have created a structure, and we're probably going to talk about a little bit more at some of the other points. We've created a structure so that individuals and organizations can actually come together. Membership in ULU is not just for individuals. It is for institutions as well. And when people are look at our turtle list, our members can look at a members list. And when you go down that list, you not only see individuals, but you see institutions as well, businesses, other types of institutions. And so we're calling for unity among individuals and institutions for the purpose of economic self-determination. But we're not just calling for it. We are actually creating the mechanisms and the opportunity, and hopefully not too difficult, an opportunity for people to actually come together in a structural way, in a predictable way, with benefits, with mutual benefits for the community and for the individuals and institutions that participate. So, yes, that second point is where now things come into actuality, into reality, by us pooling our resources. And, of course, there is no scarcity of resources. We are resource-rich. Not only, there's a discussion and have been a discussion for several years now about the African in America having more than $1 trillion a year flow through our fingers, but that's not our greatest richness, or that's not our greatest asset. We are blessed with skills, with energy, with ideas that spring from who we are as a culture. And there have been people who have put the pen to calculating the value in dollars of our intellectual wealth. And it's more than $1 trillion a year. So we don't come as beggars. We come resource rich, not only as individuals, but again, our institutions. And so it's important that we recognize and calculate just who we are in the world, and recognize the value of not only our monetary wealth, the land holdings, again, the intellect, the energy, the other resources that we have to give.
That's a very good point that you bring up about not just money as a resource. Not too long ago, I saw an article. It's an old, it's a relatively old article, and I really forget the value, but I think that melanin itself has a value, and it's worth, I think it was 6 times the value of gold. So I thought that that was quite interesting even in and of itself, that just the melanin in the skin, it has been, has had a dollar value put to it. And we know that a lot of developments that fuel everyday society came from the minds of Black people. So I can see what you're saying as far as, you know, our minds being, and I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, people talk bad about us, but they don't really want us to leave American society, because we do contribute quite a bit, even into like the fads and fashions and styles and flavor and flair that we have, that they take out of the hood and put on Fifth Avenue or whatever and big up what it is we're doing, if somebody else makes big money off of it.
And when we and we think of all of that being in our own structure, and and we control it and benefit from it, it changes quite a bit. And I'm hopeful that we don't start selling melanin, but I'm sure there. I've never looked at that market, but if there's a market, there's certainly people that will explore it.
Absolutely, yeah. I didn't really do. It was just an article that said that, you know, and people were making comments on it, but I didn't see where there's a market on it or how they came to that conclusion of the value of melanin like that. But I thought that was, you know, they talk bad about us all the time, but we're worth at least 6 times more than gold. An ounce of melanin is worth more than 6 times an ounce of gold. And according to them, they would have us think that gold is one of the most valued things on the planet. So, So the next point, Baba, number 3, this cooperatively owned business enterprise is reflective of our unique culture and interest in the world.
So let's reflect on the previous two, and we say we take full responsibility and for number 1, and then number 2, we're asking and building a system so that individuals and businesses and other institutions can come together to pool our resources. And number 3 say that the nature of that coming together, the structure, the process, the spirit of it, is reflective of who we are and who we have been in the world. So we're not seeking to build a structure that mimics the corporate structures in Europe and America and other places, but we are building a cooperatively owned business enterprise that is, again, reflective of African people, African values, who we are, who we have been, and it's also reflective of where we want to go. So a lot of care, attention and care is being taken to build the institution so that it gives us good potential to reach our goal, but reach our goal as who we are, carrying our values, again, reflective of our culture. So that's very important, and there are institutions inside of ULU. Well, let me back up. Before the institutions, we have a four-page values and ethics document that sets the tone for everything that we do, from a value, from a moral, from a cultural standpoint. So that's one of our primary documents, and all of our members receive, in addition to our 22-page operating agreement, which is like our bylaws, but every member receives, when they join, the four-page values and ethics document. But even after they receive it, that document and other primary documents are in the members' back office, so they can always, and we can always go there and refer to it. But that point of a system that's cooperatively owned, group owned, and reflective of our culture is important, because we could very easily build a system that is successful in exploiting us as well. So we, you know, and sometimes it's exploitive and we don't even intend it to be, because we haven't paid critical attention to making sure that that it expresses the best of who we are, and the best of who we have been, and the best of who we will be.
I like that point, because we only know one way, and that's exploitation. So when we get on top or become the head of things, we just do what we've been programmed to do. And it's not really us, I think. And I think that's why some of our ventures do not succeed, because we don't know any better. And I like that ULU is teaching us, you know, we're learning together how to do better, how to think a different way. I'd like to invite people to join the conversation. Please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone to make a comment or to ask a question. Let's see, do we have anybody that's wanting to ask a question or comment? No, not right at this time. So I'm going to take a quick music break here, Baba Hakima, and then we'll be back for you to share some more information about our 10-point plan.
And let's go back over 3 before we go to 4. That's a good bit that more could be said. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the drum we go. As a people, out of the drum, we come. Hey. Out of the drum we come. Oh. As a people, out of the drum we come. No. Oh. Out of the drum. The dance, everybody dance. Respect yourself. The dance of the elder. Everybody, everybody dance. Respect yourself. Everybody dance. Respect your elders here. Everybody dance. Respect your elders. Yeah.
Okay. Welcome back to Dare to Win. Tonight, our featured speaker is Baba Hakima, who is one of the founders of Ulu. And we are discussing the Ulu 10-point appeal and plan for the new black economy. Baba Hakima, you said you wanted to pick up again with number 3. Do you want me to read it, or you?
You can read it again. But before you do, thank you for playing.
That's your song.
And family, that's a special piece for us. That's by Dale Jones, and of course that Dale continues to be, even though he's an ancestor now, you know, Sister Q's life partner. And, you know, I had the privilege of entertaining them both, I don't know how many years ago it's been, but thank you for that piece. And, you know, I've saved it as well. I play it from time to time, so thank you. But, yeah, you can read number 3 again, and I want to point out a couple of other points.
Okay, all right. So this cooperatively owned business enterprise is reflective of our unique culture and interests in the world.
Brother Ankti, who's also on the board of directors, often reminds us that culture is in business a culture, and I wish I had the words that he uses, but he says, you know, he talks about the culture standing up and walking. But in a business setting, whatever your fundamental beliefs, it comes out. It's operative. It's alive. And in many cases, it's more potent there than any other institutions because businesses tend to be aggressive, penetrative. So, and again, we want to remind the family that when we talk about the business enterprise, we're not talking about anything small. Obviously, it's small now, but we are looking forward to growing where we have hundreds and eventually thousands of businesses doing millions and eventually billions of dollars, tens of billions, and maybe even hundreds of billions of dollars in gross revenue on a yearly basis. There are co-ops in this part of the world, in Europe, and maybe other places, maybe I know in Argentina. These are very large co-ops. A lot of times when we think of co-ops, we think of ma and pa operations. But there are co-ops that involve tens of thousands of members and billions of dollars in revenue on a yearly basis. And that's what we are planning for. That's what we're looking for in terms of Ulu. So, again, this culturally based structure is critical as you begin to build and build out because, again, if you're not careful, the larger you are, you know, certain other aspects of competition inwardly and outwardly seep in. And so we want to build this intentionally and based on not only our culture, but also our intent in terms of what it is that speaks to our self-interest today and our self-interest as far as we can project into the future. So thank you for allowing me to refer to Unctee's warning that we really be careful about making sure that the cultural aspect of our business practice is exactly what we want, or if not exactly what we want, we are building towards being more exact, that we dare not be casual about the cultural and moral implications of everything that we do. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a very good point, I think. Okay, so we're going to go to number four now, the governance and legal form of the cooperative accommodate democratic principles, one member, one vote, with elected leadership.
Ashe. So in the spirit of group ownership, we've created a structure where every member is equal. There are no junior members and senior members. A member is a member is a member is a member. Every member has one vote, and that vote is used in two ways. Is used to elect leadership every year in March. At our annual meeting, three members of the board or three seats on the board are contested. Board members who have served in those seats previously, if they're nominated and if they accept, they can run again, but each year those seats have to be vacated and then refilled. We have a 9-member board of directors, and each year in rotation, three seats are vacated. And so every member is encouraged to participate in the voting process. And in our operating agreement / bylaws, that process is laid out. So one member, one vote with elected leadership. There are no czars, there are no kings, there's no, you know, emperor. There's no bloodline that speaks to leadership. It's democratic, and that's so important because a lot of times, if you use any other structure, you probably will not get the improvements, the dynamic progression that you want, new ideas, new blood, so to speak, coming into the process. This last year, one member that was seated previously decided to stand for election, and that person was reelected. But we got two new people, one fairly young person and another person maybe not as young, but with energy and foresight. And so that new thought, energy, perspective coming onto the board every year helps to keep us fresh and invigorated. And so, yes, we have a democratic process. Again, one member, one vote with elected leadership. And, of course, you would expect that in a cooperative, in a group-owned structure and platform.
That's a big difference from the way corporations are generally run. I remember, as you were saying this, one member, one vote, I remember a few years back, Facebook had a big, most people were dissatisfied with the job that Zuckerberg was doing, and it was a real public thing that they were having an election. The board of directors was going to meet or whatever to put him, they really wanted to get him out, whatever, president of the company or whatever. And although most of the people wanted him out, he could not be voted out because he owned 57% of the shares and therefore had 57% of the vote. So it was like, in our instance, that would be, say if it was 10 people, it would be 10 people each, 10 people and 10 votes. In his instance, it was, say, if it was 10 people, he had like the equivalent of 6 votes. So the other 4, you know, the other 9 people only had 4 votes, and there was nothing they could do to get rid of him. So
exactly.
I think that's an important point to have, that it's one vote. We have somebody on the line.
Okay, remind me that there's some other points we want to cover with
number four.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's someone on the phone. Let me get them on. Okay, caller with the last 4 digits 3176. Please state your name, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Greetings, Sister Q and Baba Hekima. This is Brother Auntie from Atlanta, I'm really thoroughly enjoying this evening's broadcast. It's just making sure that we understand the foundation upon which Ulu is built, and I just wanted to echo what you just said, Sister Q, about that Facebook could not take Zuckerberg out because he owned 57% of the shares, and that's one of the primary differences between a cooperative and these capitalist corporations. The voting ballot in the corporation is based on a share. So depending on the number of shares that you own, that's the number of votes that you get to exercise. In a cooperative, and particularly in Us Lifting Us, the vote is based on the member. So one member, one vote. And so really we don't see a genuine democracy in America because so many people, livelihoods are derived from working in these corporations. And all of us who have ever worked in these corporations know that, for example, when General Motors decided they had to close those factories in Ohio and in Pennsylvania, they didn't ask the workers what they thought about that. They just shuttered the plants. They didn't have a vote. And if they had owned shares, because they would not have owned the majority of the shares, they still could not have turned that decision in a direction that was favorable to them. So this cooperative, Us Lifting Us, takes serious the importance of being a democratic structure. One member, one vote. So Sister Q, you might own 10 co-op units. Baba Hekima might have 25 co-op units. I may only have one co-op unit. But when decisions are being made about policy in the direction of the co-op, each of us has one vote. And so thank you, Sister Q, for highlighting that and making so clear the dramatic difference and value that we have in Us Lifting Us, because it truly is a democratic structure, one member, one vote. So thank you, and I'm going to continue listening and enjoying the program.
Thank you, Brother Ankin. Okay.
Thank you.
Baba Hekima.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Ankin. He covered the points that I wanted to continue with that point. And, of course, we like to, people like to tout about how democratic America is, and Ankin made it clear that from a political or electoral political point of view, it is somewhat democratic. But from an economic standpoint, it's a dictatorship. You don't have any say-so in the marketplace at all. And as Auntie pointed out in Ulu, voting is not based on how many units or shares of ownership you own. And at this point in Ulu, there is no limit to the number of units or shares you can own. There may come a time when we may make the decision to cut back on that, but right at this point, there is no limit. Yeah, that one member, one vote with elected leadership is critical. And so as we anticipate a structure with thousands of members, we have a way of being able to conduct business even with large numbers of members and the voting process. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. We're going to number five now. Only members of the cooperative and not the public have the opportunity to secure ownership units or equity in the business enterprise with the potential to amass billions of dollars for community development.
Ashe. That's the reason we come together. We come together to aggregate again. And but we have a kind of a two-step process. A person must first apply for membership in ULU and be approved. And then once a member is approved, then that member has an opportunity to acquire an equity stake in the company. But that opportunity is never given to the public, only to members, and only to members who have been vetted. In other words, just because a person fills out an application and sends in a $50 membership fee, they're not automatically approved for membership because there are certain conditions, there's certain things that we want our members to agree to, and we also want to be certain that all of our members are of Black African descent. We have no interest in building this superstructure and have it taken away from us and serve the interests and needs of other communities. We are building this to serve the needs of our people locally, nationally, globally, and we're very intentional about that. So even a member who secures an ownership unit cannot sell it or trade it or give it away to anyone. There's a process, and if that member meets the criteria and they want to liquidate their assets, their equity, their unit, then it's only back to the company and never to anyone else. Now, members can will their equity units to their children, grandchildren, or persons, loved ones, but only if that person or entity qualifies for membership. In other words, no one other than members will ever own equity in ULU. But again, remember the point before, power and voting strength is not based on unit holdings anyway. You know, it's only based on the vote. But it's important to understand that only members can acquire equity. Now, what that means is that we're setting up a win-win scenario, a way to benefit the community and a way to benefit the member. What we are doing is putting in place and building a system where, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more later, but I want to go ahead and cover it now, where we are creating these institutions that provide needed goods and services in the community, that create jobs and produce a surplus. And so members who own equity in the company based on, you know, those maturing can put themselves in position to receive a portion of the surplus on a continuous basis. And at its height, what we're actually doing is giving members an opportunity to create a permanent income stream for them and their families. Now, we're not talking about getting rich and becoming kabillionaires, but certainly, as we contribute, and not only the Benjamins, the dollars or whatever currency, and our labor and our genius, we want to be able to see the community benefiting from it. But we also think it important that some of that success, a fair amount of that success, is also shared with the people and entities that aggregated and put those resources in place so that we could actually do what it is that our mission is to do. So, but everything in our structure points to us being able to hold on to not only the surplus that we generate, but the institutions that generate them. Sometimes the value, the greater value, is in the machinery, the land, the buildings, the know-how, you know, logistics and everything else. And so we don't want to just create a situation where we pass dollars down or an income stream, but we want to pass to future generations the systems and institutions that perpetuate that benefit for our community and our people as well.
Thank you, Barbara. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number to call is 929-477-2789. Click on the number one so I can see that you want to have make a comment or ask a question. Barbara, we're going to take another quick music break, and then when we come back, we can wrap up. Welcome back to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night weekly radio program, where we discuss taking control of the economic destiny of our people and how to do that. And tonight I'm here with Baba Hakima, who is talking about what UU is and what UU is to do. Baba Hakima, would you like to continue at this point?
Yes, I want to make a point, though, and we'll go to the next point in a moment. We haven't talked about an equity unit in UU. Membership yearly to be able to participate in the voting process is $50. The first year's $50 is considered a processing fee, but again, it qualifies you to vote and participate in not only the election, but when we're deliberating in terms of policy, you know, members vote on policy as well, not only in terms of leadership, but any changes, additions to the operating agreement, members have to approve that. A unit of ownership in UU is $1,000. And members, some members, you know, have that in hand or in an account, and they can pull it and purchase a unit at their leisure. Most of our members are not in a position to do that. So we have three subscription levels, $25 a month, $50 a month, $100 a month. And so we encourage all of our members at least to be at the $25 a month level. And obviously it takes them more than a year to accumulate $1,000 to purchase their first unit. And we're hopeful that they don't stop there, that they continue the $25 or $50 or $100 clip and secure additional units. I want to talk about a scenario. Think of 1995, with more than a million black men assembled in Washington, D.C. for the Million Man's March. Think of what it would have meant if Farrakhan, Willie Wilson, and Ben Chavis and the leadership would have said to all of us men assembled there, go back to your local communities, do whatever you have to do, and in a year from now, every one of you, we want you to come back with $1,000 each.
Wow.
And put into a community development fund. I dare say at least 50% of those brothers who were on the mall would have done that.
Right.
So we're talking about doing it now. And we're talking about pooling that money, and then then we're going to go to the next one and talk about the next point. And I guess in this point we can follow up and make that scenario real. So you can go ahead and read the next point.
Okay, so we're up to number six, and that is the cooperative focuses on opening and operating businesses in local communities that, one, provide needed goods and services, two, create new jobs, three, stimulate additional business activity, and four, yield a fair profit.
And those four points are very important. So if we think about the scenario that I set up in terms of the Million Man's March, encouraging that kind of aggregation of funds, the two things that you do not do, in our opinion, is you do not give to charity, and you do not give or make loans to businesses. What you do is you use the aggregated resources to establish businesses that meet these four criteria that, what are those criteria again? That first of all, provide a needed good and service. That create jobs. That, what's the next one?
Stimulate additional business activity.
And four,
yield a fair profit.
So yes. if you use the aggregated resources to establish businesses that meet a need, that create jobs, that stimulate additional business in the community because you're going to be doing business with other black businesses, and that yield a fair profit, some of those businesses will be in the finance arena, and some of those businesses themselves will support the entrepreneurs. So you don't take your base fund and use it speculatively. You use it to build the core institutions. And, of course, a part of our plan is that for every business that is successful, it's linked to a nonprofit in the local community. And on a continuous basis and a consistent basis, supports those nonprofits. So this is why we aggregate. Well, I think we've already talked about why we aggregate to build a global structure that speaks to our aspirations to control the economics of our community. But this is how it's broken up to meet to provide needed goods and services, to create jobs. There are co-ops in the world that have tens of thousands of employees.
Wow. Okay.
And a lot of times we don't think about that. A lot of times when we think about, for instance, the Mondragon Cooperative out of the Basque region of Spain, we think about the fact that they do from, you know, $15 to $18 billion a year in gross revenue, but you don't think about the right at 100,000 jobs that they create. And so that the job creation portion of it is a community building feature in and of itself, let alone the businesses, but the salaries that go to families, and then the charity from each of those successful business supporting local charities. And number six, is that where we were? Is
yes, that's where we were.
Yeah. And
yes.
We are not looking to build businesses that are structured to rob our community. So we talk about a fair profit. Probably a better term is a fair return or fair surplus. Some of our businesses may not yield any surplus. At a point of in our history, J. Paul Getty was considered the richest man in America, and the common perception is that he owned oil wells that were just gushing with oil. But the truth was is that he had oil wells that never produced a drop of oil. And he had other oil wells that produced a little bit, and he had a few oil wells that were gushers that were very successful. But his success came from the fact that he owned thousands of oil wells.
Okay.
And so a lot of our businesses will be small, some will be medium-sized, a few will be large, but we want to focus on building those businesses in local communities and having eventually thousands, hundreds, and eventually thousands of businesses that we own. And the ones that reach maturity and begin to produce a surplus will give us the ability to create more. But we're not in the business of robbing our people, of making exorbitant profits. So we say a fair return or a fair surplus. But our primary goal is to meet the needs of the community, to create the jobs, and to stimulate the economy locally. But we do value the fact that it is of value and excitement when we can return, even if it's not much, a little bit of the proceeds or our success to individual businesses, institutions, and individuals. In other words, to our membership.
Okay. Thank you, Barbara. We are almost out of time, so we look forward to having you come back at some point next month and finishing up on the 10-point plan. Yes, and we want to thank everyone who joined us this evening. We will be back next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time with another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Ashe. Take care, family.
Peace.
To people in the room tonight.
You're not a natural being.
Come on, talk to him, say it.
Having a spiritual experience.
But you're...
I want to love in the spirit. fruits of the Spirit.